Hey, welcome back to another episode, Subi fam. Episode 21. Wow, we're really moving along, aren't we? If you didn't get a chance to, check out the bonus episode that I released on Friday. It was with Jen from Eccentric Designs, and I wanted to do that for her and give her the opportunity to talk about being in business for a year and being here providing decals for the Subi community. So go give that one a listen if you haven't had a chance. And as you can see by the title, I have 4x4 Subi on the podcast today. So we get into his build, kind of what influenced him to buy a Subaru and a Crosstrek in the first place, and then kind of his adventures along the way and where he's at now. So before we get into that, let's get into some news. Arizona Soft Road Nation will be hosting their first meet and greet event on June 5th at AJ's on Central Avenue from 7 to 10 a.m. All rigs are welcome, so check out the Soft Road Nation Arizona page for more details. If you are in the Chesapeake or Virginia Beach area, it's time again for that monthly Brews and Ruse meetup at Garage Brewery hosted by them and Adventure Dad Wagon. That is going to be this Wednesday, May 26th, starting at 5:30. Hey, is anybody out there a little too timid to hit the trails because you do not have that underbody protection that your car needs, like some skid plates? Well, now's the time to get some because I actually have a discount code with Primitive Racing for listeners of the podcast. If you buy a bundle package of skid plates, meaning two or three skid plates, you can get an additional 5% off of your purchase with the discount code that I have. And that code is S, the and symbol, U, S-K-I-D, and then the number 5. So that code will get you an additional 5% off one of their bundle packages. I also have a discount code for 5% off of a lift kit. And that code is similar. It's S, the and symbol, U, L-I-F-T, and then the number 5. And that'll get you 5% off of a lift kit. As with the previous episode, this episode is brought to you by Primitive Racing. They are my first sponsor, and I'm super excited about that. I'm also very thankful for them giving me a full set of skid plates as their way to help support the podcast and be a part of this journey. So thanks again, Primitive Racing. As soon as the weather cooperates and it stops raining here, I'll be able to put them on. I'm looking forward to that, and then I'll report back. To give a little bit of info about them, Primitive Racing is a manufacturer and retailer of high-quality parts and accessories for Subarus, like what all of you drive. Boasting a complete lineup of skid plates, lift kits, and a huge inventory of the unrivaled King Springs, Primitive has been making innovative products and accumulating a catalog of unique and hard-to-find solutions. They also have the knowledge and experience to make recommendations to meet the needs of the ever-growing segment of Subaru off-road enthusiasts. Again, like all of you. So check them out at get-primitive.com. You can check out their Instagram page. There's a link there for their website. And then I will also have a link to their website in this episode. You can also find the discount codes for the skid plates and for the lift kit in the details of this episode and the previous one, and then moving forward from that. So check them out, and if you're not following them, give them a follow, and check out all their Instagram posts and their website for all their products besides just skid plates and lift kits. Before we get into the shout-outs, I wanted to say I was able to hit some trails this weekend, or at least the Cheeseburger Loop Trail. And I was coming back from Dallas on Sunday, and I let my son drive part of the Cheeseburger Loop, especially the fun part. So go look at my post from Sunday if you missed it. There's a little video. There's no sound to it, but there's a video of him kind of going over his first obstacle and me kind of guiding him. That was the audio that I took out because I kept telling him to go slow, go slow, go slow, go slow, go slow. And then I was trying to tell him to stop, but so I just decided to put the video only because it just represents what he was doing, and I think he really enjoyed that, and I'm glad to have given him that opportunity. And I'm hoping to get back out there again next weekend and hit some more. Hopefully, kind of sucks that it's been raining so much, but it makes the trails fun. So hope everybody had a great weekend also, And now it's time to get into those shout-outs. All right, we've got Accolade Auto, Melee Design Firm and Melee Media, Baron Link, In Sand We Trust, Frosty Forester, Audiophile, and That Lifted Les. So there you go for the shout-outs. Now let's go ahead and get into this conversation with 4x4 Subi. You know, I've been following it for a while. Like I said, I first saw it on YouTube and I was like, that thing is like, I didn't even really know. Like, I didn't know people called it modded, you know, cars or putting on mods or something. I was just like, that car has a lot of stuff on it. That was like kind of my explanation of it. So
that's pretty much how I built it. Yeah. It was, what else can I add to it?
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I got to a point where it's like, what can I do at this point? There's nothing left to do.
Yeah. Well, you did paint it a different color. So
that was. Yeah. Out of lack of things to do.
Yeah.
The next thing is an engine swap because there's nothing else.
Yeah. There you go. Well, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us like what part of the country you live in and anything else you want to let us know about you.
Awesome. Yeah, I am Michael. I'm from Los Angeles. I own 4x4 Subi, and I work for Relations Race Wheels, doing mostly media and strategic communications. And I'm also the owner of Coda Pins. It's kind of my half-dead brand of lapel pins based on some Subaru influencers in the community. So I got a couple of Subaru designs in there.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. I started it a couple of years ago, but it was doing good up until Christmas one year. And after Christmas, it was like all my New Year's resolutions took over. So the company kind of stalled.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, that's good that your New Year's resolutions took over, you know, nothing wrong with that.
They took over for a couple of months and then died themselves. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what influenced you to your decision to buy a Subaru and then why a Crosstrek?
Well, actually, I never in my life thought I would have a Subaru. Before this car, I had mostly faster cars. Like I had a bunch of Infinities, and then right before I got the Crosstrek, I was driving an Audi, and the lease was coming up, and I was thinking about getting a Lexus IS350. And I remember one night me and my buddies were walking around town, and I think we were at a birthday party or something. So we were a little tipsy and we were sobering up walking around, and we walked to the Lexus dealership and I was looking at the car and everything. And then we kept walking and I saw the Subaru dealership and I saw the orange Crosstrek 2018. It was just standing there, you know, on those little lifted displays.
And oh, yeah.
It just
yeah.
took over. In my head, I was kind of thinking, okay, I drive fast and I'm tired of getting tickets. And if I get the Lexus, I'm going to do a lot of mods to it and I'm going to drive fast and get tickets.
Yeah.
But if I get this Crosstrek, I can't do anything to it. It looks good as it is, a stock car, you know, kind of like a soccer mom car, but it's beautiful, you know, and I love the color. It's a very confident color. So that moment kind of just tilted everything. And I was like, this is it. I want this. So next day I went to the dealership. They gave me terrible prices. After that, I went to one of my leasing guys and I told him all the features I want and all the features I don't, because I didn't want eyesight. I didn't want the sunroof because it was like $4,000 or $5,000 on top of the price for features that I don't really want. So he found one that was coming on the boat from Japan and I instantly got that lease. This car is a lease, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I instantly got that lease. It was delivered to me 6 miles on the car, which, according to one of my followers from a while ago, that's how long the test track is in Japan.
Oh,
so
nice.
I am one of maybe three people that have ever driven this specific car.
Wow. That's cool. So you said that, you know, you were going to mod out the Lexus and everything. Did you say that you weren't planning on modding out your Crosstrek?
Yeah, I wanted to make better financial decisions by not modifying the cars, but that backfired on me.
Yeah, I think it went the opposite way there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, it did.
Did you not have any interest in Subarus before? Did they just not appeal to you?
You know, I never considered them because I wouldn't get a WRX just because of, I don't know, I had a couple of friends that had WRXs and they were just terrible people. So that kind of killed the vibes for me.
Yeah.
So other than that, I didn't know the Crosstrek existed. I knew the Outback existed, but it wasn't really my style. I never went into getting a car thinking of having the adventures and stuff that I would have after I bought that one, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, now that car has taken you so many places. You know, I've looked through your Instagram, and you've been a lot of places with it. You've met a lot of people, and you've done a lot of crazy things to it. So, yeah, I mean, I a lot of people that I have on the podcast, they, you know, I've had people say, I had no intentions of modding out this car. I didn't want to do anything to it. I want to keep it stock. And then, you know, people just don't know that what they're getting into. And that's, like, one of the coolest things about being part of this community is getting it and not knowing, and then later on down the road you're like, I couldn't imagine having anything else.
And you know, when I had that idea of I can't mod this car, it's because, you know, I saw it as a cheap crossover. You know, it was not something that would have a lot of aftermarket support behind it. So, you know, with the 150 horsepower back then, I was thinking, my mindset was, you know, engine, you know, what can I do to it? Can I turbocharge it? Can I, you know, this and that, but there really wasn't much available for the Crosstrek. So I was like, okay, this is going to be fine. You know, I'm going to get the car and I'm going to focus on other things in life. And then I saw somebody online with all terrains. I think they were on a trail in Northern California, and they got the all-terrains, they got the Method 502s, like every other Crosstrek back then. And it was just that ticked something in my brain. And I was like, I got to get that. I got to get the wheels and the tires because I want to go out and I want to go camping. Because when I was younger, my parents weren't really outdoor nature-y people. So in my youth, I never really experienced, you know, going out camping, doing all those things. So I was mostly a hiking person. I always had like a connection to nature. I loved hiking. I loved going out, but it was never, you know, let's go camping.
Yeah.
So when I saw that car, I was like, you know, this is my opportunity. I might as well, you know, I'm not going to mod the car, but I'll put, you know, $1,000 into it, get some wheels, get some tires, and I'll be good. You know?
Yeah. So when you bought it, you were thinking like, I just really like the way this car looks, and it's like kind of drawing me to it, because I know obviously the color, because that was the very first Crosstrek I ever saw was an orange one back in 2013. And I was like, what is this car? This is like awesome. So, I mean, I can imagine like you get the car and then you start finding out what other people are doing, and then the wheels start turning a little bit, you know, so to say, since that was kind of the first thing that you got. And then where did it go from there?
Oh, man. I got the Method 502s, the BF Goodrich KO2 tires. And I remember when I was buying the tires, it was the Subaru XV forum. And some people still tell me, like, to this day, they're like, hey, I was looking up tire sizes and I saw your post from like 4 years ago. And, you know, I asked what tire sizes fit, and everybody would always say 215, 215, 215. But one guy was like, I have 235s and I fit them on stock sizing. And in my mind, it was the beefier the tire, the better it is, because, you know, more rubber, more air down, you know, you get more grip.
Yeah.
So I got the 235s, I got the Method 502s, and I went to, I think, 4 or 5 tire shops, and every single one of them refused to mount those tires for me because they said it would not fit. It would not fit. The calipers are too close to the rim. It won't fit. The tires are too big, blah, 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 blah. Eventually, I went to one really, really janky shop, and they were like, yeah, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
So they put it on. They tried to balance it. the first time I drove out of the driveway, every little bump with those 235 tires, every little tiny crack in the road would cause my whole car to scrape because it would rub onto the back, the little plastic trim on the outside of the wheel well.
Yeah.
And on the inside of the fender liners and everything. And the first time I actually went off their lot, it threw off all of the balancing little, not magnets, but little weights.
Yeah, yeah.
They all got snapped off instantly. So I had to turn right back around, go in there, and they had to figure out where to put them so that it doesn't get torn off.
Now I know why all those other shops didn't want to do it.
yeah. But it worked. It worked with a little bit of effort.
So did you have any rubbing when you turned?
Yeah. I still have rubbing when I turn, even without a bumper, without everything. It's just, it's such a minor rub when I'm going like really fast and I'll brake really hard to turn.
Yeah.
When I'm braking and turning, it'll rub somewhere. I'm too lazy to figure out where, so I just live with it.
Yeah.
But when I actually got everything installed, it was rubbing on every little bump, like I said. And my solution was, hey, let me get three of my fat friends and let's go camping 400 miles away. And that trip definitely took away the rubbing.
Yeah.
I actually have some pictures on Instagram of the trip and how loaded up the car was. It looked like it was lowered because the back springs were just completely down. There was not even an inch of space above the tire.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, that'd do it. So, so with all of your mods that you have now, I mean, and everything that you've done, what would you say that your favorite mod is?
My favorite mod is, it'd probably have to be my bumpers. Because that's like the mod that really took the car from like a regular build to the next level, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I was really hesitant to do it too. This was right after I started working at ROW and my boss said, hey, let's make bumpers. And, you know, my car is a lease. So I'm like, no, I don't want to. I want to still be able to return it if I want to.
Yeah.
But he convinced me eventually. He was like, you know, I'll buy you bumpers if you want to return it. It's fine. Let's just make them and boom. You know, everything changed after that.
Yeah, I remember when I started like looking at you, you started posting and, you know, tagging them and everything and just showing the wheels and stuff. And I went to the website and I was like, whoa, this is cool. Cause like his car is on their website when you look up Crosstrek.
Mm-hmm. Very outdated pictures that are still up there. I gotta update those pictures soon.
So how many bumper versions are you up to now? I think, was it three or are you up to four now?
We had three, but right now we're only offering one because we got so busy. We have so many orders coming in now that we can't keep up with having three different options to fabricate. So we're just offering one. I think it's the V2 bumper.
Okay. One, it was probably the most popular.
It is. Yeah. The V2 was definitely the most popular.
And y'all, I guess y'all fabricate everything there.
Mm-hmm. Everything's in-house. We take the raw metal and we've got the tube benders. Everything is CNC, laser cut. Everything is laser notched. Everything's in-house except for the powder coat, which we have a partner that does pretty much almost exclusively only our stuff nowadays.
Yeah, that's cool. So how'd you get involved with them in the first place? Because I thought you just had like a partnership, but you actually work there, which is cool.
Well, originally when I messaged, I had a buddy of mine and he was talking about saying, oh, you know, these people might make wheels for us. And I hit them up and I was like, hey, you know, I know you guys are going to make wheels. I have the 502s. I absolutely hate them. Can I like help you guys maybe find a design or choose one that would fit the Crosstrek really well? And at that point, the guy was like, hey, well, we need a marketing guy. Do you need a job? So at that point, I was working at a bike shop and I was running the bike shop, but the owner was kind of distant from the business. So he didn't really want to put in money. And it was at that time right before COVID where it was not a good location and whatnot. So the business was kind of dying off and I just saw that ending soon. So I decided, yeah, let's do it. So went with ROW. We made the first prototype wheels. Those were the RR2Vs. And it blew up from there.
Yeah. So how long have you been with them now? Like how long ago was that?
About two and a half years.
Okay.
About.
Man, that's like perfect timing too.
It was.
So with your installs, what has been, or your mods, what was the most challenging to install?
Probably it's a tie between the Prinsu rack and the skid plates.
Okay.
The Prinsu rack, purely because I had to take my headliner down. I had to do all this stuff, and it was like, it wasn't hard. It was just a lot of steps. You know, I had to drill the roof. I had to do all this, and I didn't really follow the instruction very well the first time. And yeah. It was leaking, so I had to take the whole roof rack off and redo all that. But the skid plates, when I got them originally, my front radiator support was so bent in that it was such a nightmare to install. I almost poked my radiator out with one of those bolts. So that was a very challenging install that should have been extremely easy. Well, yeah. Both of them.
Yeah. So, and have you done pretty much all of your mods yourself for the installs?
Everything but the lift kit the first time. That was the first mod that I got after the wheels and tires, where I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing this because I've never installed a lift kit. And, you know, when I got it in the mail, there was like 40 pieces and it was daunting. So I said, you know, I'll take it to my shop, or to my buddy's shop, RPM Off-Road Garage. And they took care of me. They installed it. Other than that, everything else was done by me. Yeah. And I actually, ironically, have to remove that lift soon for another project. So I'm going to be reinstalling that myself. So everything will be done by me.
That's pretty cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah. So did you see, like, because you said you saw, you know, somebody else's account with the wheels and tires, you're like, oh, I've got to get this. So have there been other cars that you have seen over the course of time that influenced you, stuff that you wanted to do in addition, you know, outside of just the wheels when you first saw those?
You know, when I first started, there weren't many second gens that were modded at all. And I didn't really follow many Crosstrek accounts. When I started my account, it was more, I used to do concert photography beforehand, and I sold my gear, downsized, and kind of stopped doing concert photography. And I didn't want to give up taking pictures, but I also didn't want to spam all my friends on my personal account with pictures of my car. So
yeah.
I made the account, and, you know, I was just kind of taking pictures and using that as a place to post them. And I didn't really follow too many people until it started blowing up a little more. Most of my influence came from, most of my influence came from like my own vision of what the car could look like, because now that the tires and wheels were there, I could see like, okay, the roof kind of looks plain. I need to get a roof rack. So I would look up roof racks, and then I saw a couple of people running the Thule XT roof rack, and I got that guy. It was really aerodynamic. It worked with the lines of the car. And little by little, you know, I saw certain people. It was mostly 4Runners, actually. I would always look at 4Runners. I loved how those 4Runners looked when they were heavily modified. So
yeah, me too.
Most of my inspiration came from there, I'd say.
Yeah, because I here where I live, most of the Subarus that I see are daily drivers. So there's actually, it's funny that you say a 4Runner, because there's actually a 4Runner that the school that my son goes to, when I pick him up, there's somebody that picks up a kid in a 4Runner that's like pretty heavily modded out, and it looks really nice. So, but like around here, that's usually what I see is Toyotas that are modded out.
Yeah. It's, you know, living in the city over here, everybody mods everything and never goes off road. So
yeah,
I see everything modded up, but it's inspiration. You know, you see something, you like it, and you just go with it, you know,
yeah,
make it your own.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I mean that's what's nice is you see a lot of people doing a lot of similar things, but it's like, you know, everybody kind of has their own flair to it, you know, what they're doing with their own car. So it's like it's cool to see, you know, the different things that people are doing. That's a lot of fun to see that going throughout the community.
Yep.
So where did the name 4x4 Subi come from?
Well, originally I was, the account's name was Double Pulp Adventures, just because I wanted to stick to the orange, to do with orange. So I said Double Pulp Adventures, but it just did not roll off the tongue. And then when I was trying to get a custom plate, you know, you can't fit all that on there. So I was thinking, okay, Subi will fit on the plate. I need three letters, and all-wheel drive Subi just did not sound as cool as 4x4 Subi. And yeah. I pictured my vision in my head was kind of like a Baja buggy racer. So I just went with 4x4 Subi, and you know, a lot of people hate that because it's not 4x4, but
I think it works. I think it's great because it's very catchy, and yeah, it's not a 4x4, but so what, you know, I mean, it's all wheel drive. You got four wheels turning, but no, I think I like the name. Like I said, it's catchy and it's memorable, and a lot of people know it. So
yeah, and it blew up because on my stories back then, anything orange I would post and be like, is that 4x4 Subi? You know, all the Caltrans trucks in California over here are always orange. So I'd be following them on the freeway, posting stories like, that's 4x4 Subi. That has to be 4x4 Subi. And then everybody would start sending me posts like their water bottles are orange. They'd be like, oh, that's 4x4 Subi on my desk. And
it
escalated so much. There was a point where I was getting like 10 to 15 people sending me random orange objects asking if it was me.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, like, how did your account blow up so much? And because it's a 2018, so I mean, you haven't had your account for too long. And I mean, you're at 20,000 followers, so that's pretty cool.
You know, I have no idea. When I first started blowing up was when I started hosting meets. I would get a bunch of people that I saw on Instagram that had similar cars, and I would go like into the LA River and I would take pictures. And I think 90% of it is just the pictures because, you know, I was good at taking pictures.
Yeah.
And well, the car looked so nice. It's the limited trim with those limited headlights. And
yeah,
even without doing anything to the car, it looks beautiful.
Oh, so. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, being a photographer, if you get creative with the photos, that's going to catch people's attention, just that it alone, and then the name, and then doing the whole, is that 4x4 Subi? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So all of those combined together, I imagine, kind of just helped it blow up.
Yeah, and I mean, my personality on my stories, I'm very blunt and very funny.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, that's good.
Or I'd like to think I am. Yeah. A lot of people don't, but
it's okay. You know, you're kind of doing what you want to do, and that's all that matters.
Exactly.
So when was the first time you took it off road, and like, where'd you take it?
The first time ever, I mean, aside from like little fire roads around my city, I took it to a Mountain Roo meet. No, that wasn't the first. Yeah, that was. I took it to a Mountain Roo meet, and this is actually a trail. I was just talking about this yesterday that I really want to redo and I can't find it, but it started out behind Arrowhead, Lake Arrowhead, and it went up. It had a double black diamond trail that was kind of intervening into it. And I remember we went with Mountain Roo, and it was the San Bernardino chapter.
Okay.
And there was just a bunch of people. I met pretty much the best people in the community were in that group on that trail run. And we got about 2/3 of the way through, which was probably about 30 miles off road. And it was the first time I ever off roaded. So I didn't air down, and I had my best friend, and we were just both beat at 2/3 of the way. We were dead. You know, we had headaches and
yeah,
just laying in the cars like, dude, let's go home.
Yeah.
So that was my first trail, but my God, it was one of my favorite trails. That had to be one of my favorite trails.
And you said you can't find it again?
I actually have the papers in my car from when they printed out papers with like the trail highlighted and everything, and like where we're going to stop and all that. But when I look at that and then I look at a map, I can't exactly connect the dots. If I sat there for 5 minutes, I could probably find it. But
yeah,
it was just a fantastic trail up in Big Bear. Lots of great trails over there.
Yeah, I've been up to Big Bear just for work, but, you know, driving up the switchbacks and everything on the roads. But it's beautiful up there, so I can only imagine that the trails up there are pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. And so when you decided to repaint your car, What kind of reaction did you get, like both good and bad, from people?
A ton of people. Well, first off, it's a wrap. It's
yeah,
painting,
yeah, that's what
so I can. Yeah, I can remove it.
Okay, cool.
But a ton of people loved it. Overall reaction was positive. A few people did not like it. My neighbors didn't like it. They were like, oh, I'm going to miss the orange, blah, blah, blah. But I always wanted a military green car. I always wanted to buy an old military truck and kind of one of those transport vehicles and convert it into a overland truck. But I couldn't do that right now. So a vinyl yeah. wrap worked.
Next best thing.
A lot of people loved it. Some folks, you know, didn't. I got a lot of messages that were saying, you know, you took my rap choice. You know, I wanted to do that. Now I can't do it because I'm green now. But funny enough, I actually originally wanted the sandstorm color, like a desert tan.
Oh, yeah.
And right before I bought the vinyl, one of my other buddies, I think it was Are You Lost? He did that.
Yeah.
And same exact thing. I was like, well, I can't do it anymore. That's it. That color's taken.
Yeah. Well, he has a truck now, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah, he went with a Ranger now.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I know, I saw that. I was like, wait a minute, did he actually get a truck and he still has a Crosstrek, or he's just all truck now?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But, yeah, it looks good, though.
It does, it does. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, I liked it. I know, because you did all this anticipation for what was coming, and you do like little snippets of it, you know, here and there, and kind of, you know, give little treats and stuff to everybody. And then you did the big reveal, and I was like, ah, it looks good. I like it.
Yeah. The black and white pictures. It was such a long reveal. I felt like I was saying, you know, I'm going to release it next week for 2 months.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you got a lot of stuff going on, and not everybody can do things when they want to in a timely manner. Sometimes it just takes time, but that's okay. And here you are now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what other kinds of trails have you been on?
You know, contrary to popular belief, I haven't been on way too many trails. Of course, in Big Bear, there's a ton of trails up there. We went on a couple that we couldn't make it completely through. I remember White Mountain was one of them. Me and Lates 23 and one other person, I think. I think it was me and him. We were with Ellie Crosstrek and one other person, but they couldn't make it because they didn't have bumper chops. We went up and it got to the point where the rocks were like 3 feet tall and had 4 feet gaps. So I was like, let's back out of there.
Yeah.
The Arrowhead trails, there's a lot in Big Bear area. Like that whole mountain is all trails, and yeah, I can explore for years.
That's really
Northern
cool.
California. I didn't do too many trails up there when I was up there, but we went on some back roads through Sonoma County forests, and it was like those private roads. So it is a trail, but it's not. There's houses and whatnot, but it was incredible. The foliage up there, just the feel of driving up there is just incredible. You have bridges made of, you know, fallen redwood trees and whatnot.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then Arizona's got a lot of beautiful trails as well. Mm-hmm. In California, mostly like Calico, Cleveland National Forest has a couple of trails. Actually, one of my favorites is Indian Truck Trail in Cleveland National Forest. And I was lucky enough to do that the day before the Holy Fire, which completely just burned the whole trail down. And it's still closed. A lot of people told me it's going to be years, maybe even decades before it reopens.
Wow.
So that's
crazy.
Sucks, because that was just a gorgeous trail and it was so close to LA that, you know, you could just escape. I was actually up there yesterday, on the other side of the mountain. There's a couple of trails over there. So real nice spot to just kind of get away really quickly.
So what would you say like the closest trail is that you can get to and just kind of escape? Like how long would it take you to get there?
Trail, that would probably be Cleveland National Forest. It's kind of tied between Cleveland National and Big Bear. Well, Gorman too, I guess. Well, Santa Clarita. There's a lot. I can't think of all of them right now, but Santa Clarita would probably be the closest trails. Rover Flats area. There's a trail, I don't know the name, but it goes up to a really big cross up on top of the mountain that looks over Castaic Lake and whatnot. That's a really nice spot. But my favorite spot is actually not a trail. It's just a campsite. It's up Angeles Crest. I live right at the base of Angeles Crest. So 35 minutes from my house, I can get to Chileo Campground. And it is just, I love the view there. It's beautiful. You could see for like 20 miles into the mountains and it's quiet. And at night you could see the stars. And before this car, I told you I had all the fast cars. I would always go into the canyons and I would, you know, drive like a little maniac teenager. So, yeah, that was like my regular go-to spot. So whenever I'm feeling stressed out or I have a lot on my mind or I just need to get away, that's my spot.
Yeah, that's super cool. So how many times have you gone camping now, or have you been too many to count?
Too many to count.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely too many to count, but I'd probably say under 60, 70 trips.
That's cool. I mean, it's cool too now that you can kind of fulfill that, you know, childhood need and desire to get out in nature and go camping and everything. Cause like you said, you did hiking, but now, you know, you can kind of, you have charge and, you know, you're in charge of what you want to go do. And now you can go camping and fulfill that, you know, that kind of childhood desire. So do you have just like a regular tent or do you do a rooftop tent?
Both. I used to do regular, I used to camp in the back of the car.
Okay.
But being a guy that's 5'11 in a cross trek, I got a little cramped and
yeah,
it was really awkward. I think I did that 4 or 5 times until I asked my buddy Jonar, hey, do you have an extra tent I can buy off you? Because I was kind of strapped for money back then. And Jonar gave me one of his old 2-person tents, which I used for a long time. Shout out Jonar, Adventure Squad FJC. Really cool, cool. FJ. Really cool dude.
Yeah, FJs are nice.
But yeah, after that, there was a point right before I got my bumpers, Thule reached out to me and they were saying, hey, you know, we're buying Tapui and we'd like to use your car on display at our employee expo in Denver.
Oh,
would you
cool.
mind? Would you mind letting us borrow the car and we'll let you keep the tent and give you whatever else you want from our catalog? And at that point, I was like, absolutely, yes. I told them that the bumpers were coming and they said it was no problem. So they set up the tent. They did everything. It was all ready to go. And then after I got my bumpers, they messaged me and said, hey, you know, there was a change of plans. The weather is not permitting the outdoor display, but I still think that it was because I got the bumpers and it kind of just,
yeah,
it went from a consumer friendly car to a very niche market car.
Yeah.
So, but I got to keep the tent and they hooked it up with like all kinds of stuff, bike mounts and
whatnot. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That was that would be a nice call to get. Be like, yeah, okay, sure.
I definitely was happy. And I always wanted a rooftop tent, but it was always way out of my budget. So that was like a dream come true. And it's such a nice tent. It's so luxurious. I made a post a couple of days ago thinking about like I can't do a ground tent anymore. You know, I need my memory foam mattress and I need my 2-person sleeping bag that doesn't constrict me. I can't do mummy bags. It's impossible for me. And of course, you know, it's just laying up there. As I said, I didn't grow up with it. So I still have that fear of like, hey, I'm going to have a bear sniffing me one night. So
yeah,
it's nice being up above everything.
Yeah, that's definitely my dream mod is a rooftop tent. Like the first time I ever saw one, I was like, whoa, wait, they make these things? I didn't know these things existed. And it was super, super cool to see that. And I was just like, I got to get one of those one of these days.
Mm.
So how long ago was that you got that one?
Over a year, probably closer to 2 years, I'd say. This was right before I got my bumper. So yeah, closer to 2 years.
Okay.
And, you know, the setup, everything is just so convenient.
Yeah, it was PNW Crosstrek was the first one that I ever saw with the rooftop tent. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's cool. So Yeah. So if you, I'm sure you've driven through mud, snow, and I know you've driven through sand because I've seen you, you had some YouTube videos, but have you ever gotten stuck in any of them?
So when Max Trax, they released their minis, they hit me up and they were like, hey, you know, this is perfect for crossovers. Would you like one to test out? We pretty much want you to go get stuck somewhere and use the Max Trax to get out. I did not fulfill that for a very long time because I could not get stuck. I tried. I've gotten stuck in all mud, snow, and sand at this point, but it's like very, very, very rare. Sand is probably the easiest to get stuck in because I'd lead us into the worst spots in Pismo Beach where the sand's really loose and really deep.
Yeah.
And at one point we had to Max Trax our way up a hill near the very deepest part of Pismo near Competition Hill. And we had to pretty much put the Max Trax down, drive 5 feet, and then we'd get stuck again. Put the Max Trax down 5 feet, Max Trax down feet for 2 hours to get
That's
up a little
crazy.
Hill. Yeah, and there was four runners next to us also getting stuck. So I have a picture somewhere, but there's a pile of probably 15 different Max Trax that are just laying around everywhere.
Oh, that's hilarious. Didn't you? But you did a YouTube video where you actually got stuck in the sand, right?
Yeah. I did. I kind of got stuck there on purpose.
Yeah.
I took a bad line just to show how to use Max Trax if you do get stuck in the sand, because they're shovels and everything if you use the other side of the Max Trax and whatnot. So
yeah,
I got stuck there. In mud, I got stuck in Santa Clarita because I would always go out after rain because I love mud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, it's like a childish instinct. I want to get my car muddy.
Yeah.
And, in Santa Clarita, every trail is just ridiculous after the mud. You will get stuck nonstop. And I had to get towed out a couple of times by my friends, but
worth it.
Still pretty hard. And then in the snow, I mean, when it gets deep, it's less getting stuck and more, you know, the snow is way too deep and you're just bottoming out and you're just sitting on the top of the snow. So
yeah,
not much you can do there.
Yeah. It's
but so the car handles really, really well. I don't think I worry ever of getting stuck, except when the ruts are like way too deep. I don't know if you saw my story yesterday, but I bottomed out my car on my frame yesterday.
Oh.
And knocked
no,
off
I didn't
a couple
see that
of,
one.
Luck, a couple of the parts, but uh-oh. Yeah, other than that, I don't really worry at all anymore.
Yeah. There's a spot behind the high school where my daughter used to go to school, and it gets pretty muddy after rain. And if they open it up, I like to go out there because it's like the only thing that I have around here that's any kind of mud. And I love that because it doesn't snow here. It only snowed the one time this year, so thankfully we had that. But I'll go back there and I start driving through it and I get all nervous and everything, like, hey, man, I'm going to get stuck because it's pretty rutted out because there's really big trucks that go back there because there's baseball fields. And so they'll drive back there to get to the fields. And so when I drive through it, it gets kind of bumpy and, you know, my car is going up and down a lot. But then like afterwards, I'm like, it just went through it with no issues at all. I'm like, why am I always worried when I come out here? It just, and it's, you know, 100% stock. So I love that it has the ability to just get through there with no problem.
Yeah. It's very capable, especially, I mean, you have a set of Max Trax in the back, you're solid, you know, or a winch, you know, both work. Winch, I prefer the Trax over a winch, actually, just because you can just throw the Trax down, whereas the winch you have to actually attach to something.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I have neither. Yeah. So if I get stuck, I'm screwed.
So. You gotta get it, man.
Yeah.
It's
and I'm
definitely
usually
one of those mods I recommend to everybody.
Yeah, no, I definitely plan to. So what's the furthest distance or longest road trip you've ever been on in your car?
It's either Northern California. I don't know the distances, but Northern California, I got up to the point where it's like right at the base of Humboldt County. And then the other trip's longer because we went to Overland Expo when I started working with RRW and he finally convinced me to get the bumpers. This was like 2 weeks I did not have bumpers. And 2 weeks before the Overland Expo, we were like, okay, let's fabricate a front and a rear bumper. So we were rushing along with like five other projects that we had. And we did not finish until the very last second. Like I was,
wow.
We didn't even have time to powder coat the bumpers. We bedlined the bumpers probably 20 minutes before we slapped them onto the car and drove off into Arizona.
Yeah.
So that was probably my longest trip because we went from here to from LA to Flagstaff, went through Lake Havasu, went through all that. And then after the Overland Expo, all my coworkers went back, but I was like, you know, I'm going to explore. I didn't drive all the way here just for the expo. So I went down a little bit to Sedona.
Sedona.
It was
beautiful.
Really rainy. The weather was terrible. It was August sucks. Or no, April. And it was really bad weather and I was alone. So I was like, you know, I don't want to really get stuck in Sedona. So I turned around, I started going up to the Grand Canyon. And when I was getting to the Grand Canyon on the way, I passed through the Ponderosa Forest and it was just, there was snow everywhere. And these trees were super tall, super skinny. It was just something I'd never seen before. And yeah, I saw this turnout and I was like, you know what? What's the worst that'll happen? You know, people come up this road, right? So I started taking it and, you know, I'm going up the trail and, you know, the path has tire tracks. So people are up there. And then the farther I go, 6 miles in, 8 miles in, the tracks start disappearing. And then suddenly I'm the only one out there. But I can see on the map that the trail kind of connects back onto the highway at some point. So
yeah,
it was really nerve-wracking. That was my first solo trip, solo with no other cars, with nothing. I was on my own. So that was very interesting. I eventually made it over to the Grand Canyon. Saw it for about 2-3 minutes before the rain all came in and started snowing and hailing and you couldn't see a single thing. And then from there, I was driving up to St. George. I wanted to camp out at Zion for that night. But that didn't work out because the snow and everything. I didn't want to go to Zion and then see 5 feet ahead of me. So
yeah,
kind of was pointless. So I turned and went towards Vegas and stayed in Vegas that night. The next few days I explored. I went to Valley of Fire. I went to Red Rock National Conservatory. I think that's what it's called. And then from there, it was kind of just camping on the way back home. I hit Mojave. No, sorry. I hit Death Valley. I hit Calico, bunch of little spots on the way. Anytime I would see a trail off of the freeway, I would take the exit and I would just go for it. You know, wake up, go make a cup of coffee on the top of a random mountain in the middle of nowhere. It was just really nice. It was serene.
Yeah. So how long was that trip?
I'd probably say, I don't know, close to 1,700 miles, I'd say.
Okay. And then like how many days were you out there?
Oh, 4 days.
Okay.
I mean, it was 4 days from Arizona. In Arizona, we spent about 3 days there. And, you know, we did some trails over there with Flagstaff and all that. About a week.
Okay. Man, yeah, that sounds like a really, really nice trip to just kind of be out there on your own and just explore and have everything open to you and just go wherever you want to go. And just like you said, you see a road and you just take it. Like that's super cool. That's the kind of stuff that I want to do. Cause we have our family reunion up in East Texas. And that's what I did the last time I was there. Cause we had it, in October and I had bought my car in September and I had seen roads that I wanted to go down, but I couldn't. And so the last, when we went out there, I was like, I can go down these roads now. And so I did some exploring, but I want to go back and do some more because there's a lot of really cool like county roads that go off into who knows where. And I love going out and just exploring and not knowing where I'm going.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's like that everywhere. I mean, Arizona, especially all those areas. But I mean, I used to drive around LA in the mountainous areas and just look for any kind of trail. And I'd sit there on Google Maps and try to find anything that is open so that I can go and I can explore it without going too far.
Yeah.
And there's just so much everywhere around us.
Yeah, it's for places like that and like the people that live up in the Pacific Northwest, I'm just like, man, everybody, like, you're very fortunate to have that stuff close by and not too far away, because like here in Texas, there is stuff, but it's just like you have to drive so far to get to it. And that's the frustrating part. It's like I have this awesome car that I love, and I don't have anywhere to take it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I feel that with LA sometimes too.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not that things are too far away. It's just that the traffic and the timing and everything is just,
yeah.
You know, to drive 40 miles, it'll take me 2 hours. it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, thankfully here, like, I mean, there's a, it's called Cheeseburger Loop. It's north of Houston, and it's pretty big. I still haven't driven the whole thing, but there's some parts of it that are pretty fun, but it takes me a little bit over an hour to get there. So it's not too terrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I saw, like, working with RRC, you mentioned, like, new products coming for your Crosstrek. So what kind of products are y'all developing besides, like, the bumpers? And, or I guess what have you developed so far for the Crosstrek?
With RRW right now, it's just the bumpers and the wheels. We were going to make rock sliders, but I don't know if we're going to, just because it's a weird car to make rock sliders for, because there's no real good mounting points. And if there's no good mounting points, then it's going to be just for looks. And there's already a bunch of companies that make these sliders that are just for looks pretty much. So we didn't want to be another one of those. We wanted utility. But we are probably going to start making smaller parts. I'm not too sure what I can discuss.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't want you to tell anything that you can't, but yeah.
Yeah. But we're going to be making a couple of things here and there. It's just gotten so busy with the Toyota market right now that Crosstrek's kind of on hold.
Yeah. Yeah. So with, talking about, you know, trails, going back to that, are there some trails that you know of that you like would be kind of like a bucket list trail that you'd want to get out to?
Trails specifically, no, but actually, yes, there is one. I don't know if I want to mention it by name, because that's, it's like a hidden treasure. Well, no, okay. It's the Lost Coast Trail.
Okay.
In Northern California. I believe you need to get a permit. It's kind of like the Wave, where you have to get a permit and they only allow a few people per year and all that. But it's a trail that goes along the coast of Eureka and Northern California. And it's just pristine, untouched beauty. And the trail goes for, I think, 20 miles or something. And then it ends up on a black sand beach. And
wow.
There's camping on the black sand beach, and there's natural wildlife there. There's elk and whatnot just living on the beach. So you're sitting there next to your campfire, and you can see from the ocean out, you know, and it's just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous trail. Other than that, Utah, I have to explore Utah. That's Utah is just so beautiful. There's 5 different parks there that I want to hit all of them. You know, Zion, I want to go do Angel's Landing, the hike. There's a bunch of, like Bryce Canyon also has a bunch of hikes, but I think there are a couple of trails in all those parks as well. So I'd love to go check those out. I'd love to go to Colorado. A lot over there. You know, everywhere, the Pacific Northwest, I haven't really been to. So I would love, everyone always tells me, hey, come out, we'll go trailing and whatnot. So definitely Washington is on my list. I'm probably going to go there within the year. I want to do kind of like a Mexico to Washington or Mexico to Canada trip. So I go down to like Rosarito, camp out there, Baja, Mexico or something, and then drive from there up camping, you know, maybe 200 miles a day of driving, and then find a nice campsite off a trail somewhere and just get to Canada, you know, visit Vancouver Island. It's a gorgeous island up there too. So that's kind of one of my bucket list trails. I guess it's not a trail, but
no, but it's a trip. Yeah. That'd be an awesome trip to do too.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Arizona. I mean, I can't get enough of Arizona. It's just gorgeous. I have to go to Monument Valley. I still haven't been to Monument Valley or Horseshoe Bend.
Yeah.
Two really beautiful spots.
I've been to Arizona. I've been to Flagstaff, and I've been to Sedona. And 'cause I had a friend that had a, 96 Toyota Land Cruiser, and he took us around a lot of places out there, and that was just like, it was so beautiful, especially Sedona. Just it was just nice seeing like all the mountains and the rocks, and just the views were just like incredible. But yeah, it's there's just so many places to explore, so many places to get out to, and only so many miles I guess you can put on your car.
Yeah, I definitely haven't put on enough.
How many miles do you have so far on it?
I think I'm at 52,000.
Okay.
Mostly, I'd say about 80% on road.
Yeah, my miles are already getting up really high, and I've only had it for like 8 months. It's crazy high because I drive a lot because I have a son that I drive back and forth to school, and then my girlfriend lives in Dallas, so I go up there occasionally, and plus sometimes I just like to get out and drive it, and I think I may need to like back off a little bit before I put too many miles on it too quickly.
Yeah, I was worried about that. My lease is actually 7,000 miles a year, I think, and 52,000 is a little bit over that.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's absolutely zero chance of me returning this car. Just the mileage fee is probably going to be about $5,000. Yeah. I actually went to Subaru a couple of days ago. I had to get a part for another car that we were working on, and all the salesmen and all the people from the dealership came out, and they were talking to me, and they're like, "Hey, do you want to return this? Like, we'll take it from you." Blah blah blah. And you know, it's one of those things where I could just tell they were like, "Oh, I could definitely sell this to somebody for a lot of money."
But yeah.
I also can sell this to somebody for a lot of money. So
yeah, exactly.
Cut out the middleman.
Yeah, for sure. So what do you get a lot of DMs about like questions about your Crosstrek?
What tire size do you have? What wheel size do you have?
Yeah.
I'd probably get 4 or 5 of those a day. how do I get sponsored? How much did you spend on your car? Is it actually a 4x4? Do you know the difference between 4x4 and all-wheel drive?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just get a Jeep?
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah,
those are the main questions, and then other people get really specific, and I'm one of those people where, and this is I think a contributing factor to why my account blew up, is I will answer everybody.
Yeah,
just about everybody. If I get a really weird question or if it's like way too long, I just can't. But
yeah,
I'll try to answer everybody and at least see their message for sure. So I get a lot of questions about very specific things. A lot of people ask about installs, and I like to help out, you know, just because if I was asking somebody, I would appreciate if they responded. So
yeah,
I always try to do so myself.
Yeah, for sure. So how many sponsors do you have?
Do I have to count?
I don't know.
I worked with a lot of brands. I got really lucky. Just right place, right time. You know, the Crosstreks were blowing up.
Yeah.
I was the biggest one. And, you know, a lot of companies just reached out and they wanted to feature their stuff because, you know, I think quality photography and quality content is very hard to find nowadays because there's a million people out there taking decent pictures. But, you know, when it comes to marketing, I think the biggest marketing tactic in this day and age is Instagram and influencers and micro influencers. So I got really lucky with sponsorships. My favorites, of course, BF Goodrich. They've helped out a lot. They've done a lot for me. ROW, although I work here, I still consider ROW as a sponsor.
Yeah.
So ROW has definitely helped me out a lot. Recently, I've worked with WaveSpec Rotors. A lot of brands hit me up to kind of release their new products. Like WaveSpec Rotors, they just released a new line of rotors for our cars. So they sent me the sample sets, and they're just fantastic rotors. Rallytech, I actually hit them up. I really wanted the Bilsteins because, as I said, my previous car was an Audi. And then with all the stuff that I've done to this car, it did get heavy, especially when it's loaded up with like the fridge in the back and all that. So Rallytech hooked it up with the overload springs and then Bilstein B6 shocks. Prinsu, when they first released the Crosstrek one, they messaged me to feature it, but I said I didn't want to because I only ever saw pictures of it empty and it just looked like a military buzz cut. And back then, I didn't really see the benefit to it. I really liked my Thule rack and everything. But once I saw one with, I think, oh, I don't remember who it was, but I saw somebody that had loaded it up and it looked absolutely amazing. And it, you know, lowered the height of the car too, which in LA is a big issue for me because I hit every parking lot roof. So yeah, that was a definite good mod right there. Crawford Performance, they have their billet lower control arms. And I remember I saw a post where the Trail Trek, I think it was Trail Trek, but he broke his rear trailing arms and they had to fix it with like a wrench. It was a really funny fix, but I just didn't want to get into that situation. So I went with those billet control arms, and then they wanted to throw the billet power blocks onto the engine and their air oil separator, which was absolutely perfect timing because I did it. I always changed my own oil, always used Motul, always did it myself. And this one time, a couple of weeks ago, probably about a month or two ago, I took it to a Jiffy Lube and they didn't drain the oil all the way and they overfilled it by at least like 2-3 quarts. And
what?
I think that air oil separator saved my ass.
Oh, that's good.
Saved me from a lot of expensive repairs.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, Thule, Agency 6, Maxtrax, Odyssey batteries sent me their batteries a long time ago as a dual battery kit. It's kind of going in and out of my car constantly because my trunk is a mess. Warn Industries with their winch, the Power Sports winch, Snowmaster with the fridge, WeBoost, Hardcore Lighting, Subtle Solutions lift kit. Other stuff isn't popping into my head, but
that sounds like a pretty good list.
A lot of companies I work with.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, I mean, they're obviously going to want somebody that is out there in the community that people recognize and can look to, you know, and can be like a source of marketing for them. So that's really good.
Yeah. And I think the biggest reason why it kind of blew up for me is because I'm very, very, very blunt about feedback. Like I see a lot of these people that get sponsorships and they rave about the product, but you know, even if they don't believe in it, they will still rave about it just because they got it for free. And I was never that person. I've been sent before Maxtrax, somebody sent me the other recovery tracks. I don't remember which ones they were, but they were those cheap plastic $70-$80 ones, and I used them once and half of those little nipples on there just instantly disappeared. So I was very honest about it. You know, I told the people like, hey, don't buy this if you don't want to use it more than once. Or if you want to use it more than once, don't buy that one because it's kind of one of those temporary band-aids. And a lot of stuff like that. I haven't really had too many bad experiences because I do a lot of research before I work with a company. And I only really work with the quality brands. So the only other thing I can think of is Anzo. They have like a little wireless lighting unit. And actually, that wasn't a sponsorship. I bought that myself. But I just had such a terrible experience because I replaced it probably 4 times. And then I emailed them and I told them like, hey, you know, I keep replacing this thing. I'm doing everything right. It's installed right and all that. But it keeps on going out, and a bunch of back and forth. But at the end, they were like, hey, if you want something that's going to last a long time, then don't buy our product. So then I switched. I did not buy their product.
Yeah. No, it's good to have that honesty, you know, because you don't want to end up like repping a brand and then have other people buy it and have the same issues, you know, and then it's good to be honest about that. So yeah,
exactly,
I like that.
Exactly. And it's like honesty and just being yourself. That's how people always ask, like, how do I grow Instagram? It's be yourself, be honest, and take good pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. So would you feel that you were kind of like famous in the Subaru community?
I hate that word. I have a lot of followers, but it's literally just a number to me.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be really excited about getting like 3,000 followers and everything. That was like my goal back then, was I really want to hit 3,000 followers, because that in my head was like, wow, it's blown up, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I hit 3,000 followers, and after that, everything's just kind of the same, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when I first started, I was like, you know, saw my followings growing and stuff, and I thought it was pretty cool. But like now, like, I'm not saying I don't care about having more followers, but like, that's not a goal for me. I mean, you know, obviously I want to do the podcast. Like, that's kind of one of my main focuses, and have people on and give them an opportunity to, you know, share their story and give them a different, you know, outlet to share what they already are doing on Instagram. But I just like engaging with people and sharing what I'm doing with my car and seeing what other people are doing with their car. And that's what matters to me. I don't really care about how many followers I get, you know. It's just, if I get more along the way, that's cool. But it's not like, yeah, like you said, it's just a number. But I enjoy being a part of the community. I enjoy seeing what other people are doing with their cars. I enjoy seeing what kind of mods are coming out. And then I enjoy sharing what I'm doing with mine. So that's, mm-hmm. that's really kind of what my goal is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a good way to put it. You know, like I said, this page started just so that I can post pictures of the car without spamming it to my friends. At this yeah. point, it's like, likes are just, when I see a lot of likes in my head, it's just like, okay, I took a good picture.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's kind of a rating of how good my photography is at this point.
Yeah. So is there anything that you can that you can share that most people may not know about you or about your Crosstrek that's not evident in your pictures?
I don't go out as much as people think I do. I only go out maybe once or twice, and sometimes 3 to 4 times a month. But I've seen comments where people are talking about me on other websites, and they're saying, oh, this guy goes out like every other day. It's like, no, I just stagger my posts.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I used to go out a ton. And I think that's also what helped my account blow up, is with Mountain Rue and all those events. I would go to every event I could, because that was like my excitement. My whole life was that car at that moment. Was, you know, this account is blowing up, I'm going to do everything to continue blowing it up. And I just want to go and hit every trail and see everything that I've never experienced. And I want to experience everything once, you know. And, yeah. You know, the community kind of died down a lot in the recent years. And COVID and another aspect of my life for the past few years was limiting my ability to go off-road with others. So it was kind of like I was doing a lot of solo trips, and all my Crosstrek friends ended up kind of being put in the back of the shelf. But now I'm starting to get back into the social aspect of the community. I'll probably be doing more group trips and whatnot, trying to do some trail meetups and whatnot. So I definitely love meeting new people. Some of the best people I've met are from the Crosstrek community. So I'd love to continue meeting more and more people. You know, as a social person, that just makes me happy. You know, I can't wait to meet new people.
Yeah, it's always fun meeting new people. And then especially if you're meeting people that are passionate about what you are too, and you can, you know, share your love of, you know, the car and then what it can do and where it can take you. That's definitely a big plus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what would you say your favorite thing is about owning a Subaru and owning a Crosstrek?
Aside from the community, the MPG and the uniqueness.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't see many cars like this out there, you know, and a lot of folks, they'll buy Jeeps and whatnot. And I feel like every single Jeep, yeah, the mods are all different, but it's like cookie cutter, you know, everybody looks the same. And to me, as a very visual person, being a photographer, I see mods almost like an aesthetic as well as utility. You know, I'll start modding my car based on utility, and you know, I'll do skid plates and all that to protect it, bumpers, whatnot. But all along the way, I'm looking at how does it look? You know, what can I do to make it better? How can I do this? How can I do that? And that's kind of where my hood came from. You know, the carbon fiber hood is,
yeah,
it's a placeholder for eventually either doing an engine swap or turbocharging it or something. But right now it's I wanted a hood scoop. And originally the idea was I'm going to put a CVT cooler top mounted, kind of like a WRX with the top mounted cooler. But
yeah,
I don't really want a CVT cooler anymore for now, just because I do want my oil to kind of get up to a higher temperature so that it burns off that liquid in case there's water.
Yeah.
If there's any water inside of my CVT, I want it to kind of burn out, and it boils up after 212 degrees, I think. So I go through a lot of mud pits. I love river crossings and whatnot. So that's an important thing. But summer's coming up, so with all the mods, with all the weight, with everything that I've done recently, I'm probably gonna have to get a CVT cooler at some point.
Yeah. So what kind of miles or MPG do you get with all the, you know, when you have it fully loaded down?
It depends on how lucky I am getting fresh gas, because there's some times where I'll get gas, and every time I get gas, I reset my trip B. My trip A is my oil changes, and my trip B is my gasoline. So I'll reset my trip B, and sometimes I'll get 16 miles per gallon, 17 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Of course, it also depends on how I'm driving. But yeah, sometimes I'll fill up, and I'll get like 25, 26, 27 miles per gallon if it's really fresh, if it's the good stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I like seeing. I like seeing that 27. And I usually get that whenever I'm highway cruise control. The car just learns really quickly to, hey, let me just sip the gas barely. And
Yeah. That's definitely good. So, and what would you say that your favorite thing is about being part of the Subaru community?
Oh my God, the people for sure. I've met so many incredible people. Subuggy, he's a first gen. I'm a banana 1984, I think, Jesse. He's a really cool guy. Became a close friend with me. Tiff with two Fs, Wandering Forester, Gabe, he's a Subaru tech. He helped me out a lot whenever I had issues. Anytime I have questions, I'll message him. When I was starting off, some of the first people I ever met were Subi Sibling Adventures. That's Richard and his family. We all went to like Wingstop, and you know, I genuinely felt like I was part of their family with, you know, Sue Ellen, Subi 28.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people. Da Diaz, Roger, James Shaw. He used to have a Forester. Now he has GX, but he's a really cool guy. All the Mountain Rue people, all the people in Mountain Rue San Bernardino, the organizers. God, I'm blanking on names right now, but all the people that have ROW on their cars, they always message me, and I always, you know, talk to all those people. I can go on forever. There's some people that I've met in this community that have really changed my life, and even some people that, you know, they're adding a new chapter to my life, you know? So
yeah,
I'm really happy to be a part of this community. I'm really happy to have this, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sure going from driving the fast cars to now driving this, you can kind of do like almost a timeline of like where you were then and where you are now and how it has really changed your life and kind of influenced, you know, your life and your outlook on being able to do what you can with your car and the people that you meet.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was driving those cars, it was very egocentric. Obviously I was younger. I was a teenager for most of like those cars, but, around 24 or 25, I was 25, I think, when I got the Crosstrek, 24. But it really, the community was so different. It wasn't about, hey, look at what I have, look at what you have. Oh, mine's better, this is better, oh, I'm faster, you know. It was not any of that. It was more about, hey, where are we going to go? What are we going to do? What are we going to experience? You know, and that was so refreshing after all the days of being in that like tuner community, I'd call it, that I would probably get a different brand car, but I would never leave the Subaru community. Like I'd have a Ford Raptor and I'd still be going trailing with a bunch of cross tracks.
it's really cool. And like, I like what you said about, you know, you don't get the mine is better than yours and look what I have, because what I've found is like you can have a car that's completely stock and it's a car that's like yours, and you're not going to look at somebody that has a stock car and be like, oh, you're not good enough to come over here with us because your car is stock. It's like, No, your car can go off-road too. Your car can go on some of the trails with us. Let's go out there and let's go have some fun. And then, you know, if they're talking about wanting to do mods, it's like, hey, well, what are you going to get? Let's see what you're going to do. I'm so excited for you. You know, everybody is like so supportive of everybody doing what they're doing for their car, and they get excited to see what's coming next. You know, it's like, and that's such another part of the community that's like really, really cool, is how excited everybody is for everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's let's be honest, 90% of the trails we're doing in our cars, even with cars like mine, a stock Crosstrek can probably do it. What you're doing with modding the car is pretty much making it more capable and making it more reliable, I guess. Because if you have all terrains like KO2s, they're thicker tires. You're not going to get flats as often. You're going to have more grip.
Yeah.
But other than tires and bumpers and a lift kit, everything else is kind of just, you know, but it's not as important. And I don't think a lot of the community focuses on to, we focus on to the experience and the adventures and the people. That's the biggest difference, is it's not what you have, it's who you are. And that's so nice, because, you know, I love meeting all these people. There's people that always post stories with like installs and they need help, and I'm always offering, hey, you know, you're 50 miles away, that's fine. I can come help you install the Prince Urek, you know. And like recently I just changed the axle of a friend of mine, Rebecca. She came over and we took her whole axle apart. And I love just learning about doing these things, you know, as I go. Obviously, I mean, I've done that before, but just the experience of being able to help somebody and then make a friend and just grow that friendship is just amazing.
Yeah.
And I've never found that in any other Subaru, I mean, in any other community other than the Subaru community.
Yeah. And this is kind of like my first time actually being in any kind of quote unquote community, because I didn't play sports in school. You know, I wasn't really doing anything, you know, after high school. And so for me, it's really cool, because it's like my first time really being a part of something and getting to enjoy something that I have with other people too, and having other people, you know, like I said, being excited for each other. So that's, and then the support is just like insane.
It is. It's wonderful. It's a fantastic community. It's because, you know, you buy a Subaru, 90% of the time you're that kind of person. That's like, you know, a caring person, you know. They always say love, it's what makes Subaru a Subaru. I think that just now clicked in my head. Like,
yeah,
everybody loves each other, you know, everybody cares.
Yeah, it's so true. So, well, is there anything else that you want to talk about or mention that we didn't talk about that you think people might want to know or that you might want to say?
I don't know. Let's go trailing. You know, if you want to go trailing, DM me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm always up for new opportunities. I'm really, really busy all the time, but anytime I get to have that opportunity, I would love to. So if anybody wants to do anything, you know, don't hesitate, message me, you know, just, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Also, like if you want RW stuff, you know, discount code 4x4CB.
Yeah. Just
plugging that in.
That's good to know too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I want to say thank you so much for, you know, being on the podcast.
Of course. Thank you, man. Thank you. This was a great experience.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad it was. So, all right, man. Well, you have a good night, and we'll keep in touch, and I'll talk to you later.
You too, man.
All right, thanks. There you have it, another episode of the Sue B and You podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed that and was able to learn a little bit more about 4x4 Sue B and Michael. So if you haven't done also already, go ahead and give him a follow on Instagram. And then he also has a YouTube channel, so you can check that out too. So have a great week, everyone, and we will see you next week for another episode. Talk to you later.